This is the new Talk the Bob Davis podcast. It's been a while since I did a straight up update podcast. So that's what we're going to do live from the Broadcast Bunker studio in podcast 374. So I'm starting to become famous for my weather predictions. I noticed on Twitter this week that people are starting to quote me as saying, I think it's going to be a really hot summer. I still think it's going to be a hot summer. In fact, my friend Greg Ryan and I were talking about this a couple weeks ago, and he said, I'm going to start calling it the global warming summer. You need to tell people to get Ryan Plumbing over to their house to check their AC to get ready for the global warming summer. Now, it has to be at least 70 degrees to have Ryan Plumbing and Heating check your AC, but I think this week we're going to have, in the coming week, it's going to be in the 60s. So, you know, through the weekend and the middle, it'll be in the high 60s, early 70s, let's say, for this week. But once it gets over 70, you're going to want to have Ryan Plumbing check your air conditioning. A lot of times the outside coils have to be cleaned. Sometimes you got filter issues. And these are efficiency issues. So if it's really, really a hot summer, and knowing Minnesotans, they don't like to be hot, so that AC is going to be running. And if you haven't had it checked, it's a really good idea to do that. Let me tell you something else about Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. They have been doing emergency service for years. They're really good at it. If you have an emergency plumbing problem, Ryan is the company to deal with it. So I'm going to give you two numbers. If you're in St. Paul on that side of the river, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, you can call 612-927-6488. Both numbers work, by the way. Metro-wide from St. Paul for over 60 years, and that means the suburbs too. Four generations at Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. So if you have an apartment building, a rental property, it pays to have your AC checked before the season gets going. Ryan Plumbing and Heating on University Avenue in St. Paul, just west of the state capitol, where they've always been. Again, think Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Get your AC checked. Make sure that you got their name in your mind for emergency service in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul. And yes, they go to the suburbs too. Thanks, Greg, for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcasts. There's a lot of stuff going on. I'll probably get at least one more update podcast before the end of the week and before I head out again in the mobile podcast command vehicle, because I'm going to head out east and I'm hoping to get into Washington. Going to go all over the southeast pretty much. So I'm going to go down through Tennessee and Kentucky all the way to the tip of Virginia, and then drive up towards Richmond and Washington from there. So I'll keep you updated on that. So I'm really, really excited about getting back out on the road and eating beef jerky and drinking coffee and driving the mobile podcast command center. We're going to be adding some radios and some other toys. So I'm pretty, pretty excited about that. And I'll talk about that in future podcasts. But there's a lot of stuff going on that I won't get to in this podcast, because there's still stuff sort of on the top that's kind of the icing that I have a lot of passion for. First of all, the IRS got hacked, which is no surprise to me. We'll talk about that in a future podcast. But already the head of the IRS, John Kosgan, is trying to minimize the fact that the IRS apparently is not secure. I was really amused to see the media coverage of obviously a tragedy down in Oklahoma and Texas, where there's been a lot of rain. And it's very interesting to me how the media has been covering this, which I'm going to talk about, not in this podcast, but in future podcasts. But very quickly, you know, they seem to have taken all of the weather in the middle part of Central America all the way up to Minnesota and put it into one story about Oklahoma, Missouri, Houston, and parts of Texas. It is spring in the Midwest and in the middle part of the United States. The weather is transitional. There are going to be storms and tornadoes and thunderstorms and lots of rain. There is every year at this time of the year. And it's just amusing to me how the media wants to cover this as one thing, as though this one thing, this one storm system that did all this damage has some sort of consciousness. You know, Oklahoma City and Tulsa are about as far from Dallas or Houston as I think Chicago is from Minneapolis. I mean, they're a long way apart. And one would ask the question, if you're from the Midwest and you're from Minneapolis and St. Paul, do we have the same weather as Chicago? No, we don't. And it's often different weather systems cause different kinds of storms because of different reasons. So it drives me crazy to hear about that. Every spring, there are snows, there are tornadoes, there are thunderstorms, there are heavy rains. It happens all over the country at this time of the year. And I don't understand why we have to cover that as one story. So I guess I did talk about it because there's really nothing more to say about that. But I do want to talk about politics for a minute. So now we have Rick Santorum, George Pataki, Lindsey Graham. Rick Santorum, I think a former, was it a congressman or a senator? I can't even remember anymore because really we all know Rick Santorum as a presidential candidate. George Pataki, who was the former Republican governor of New York back in the distant misty past. Lindsey Graham, who is a senator from one of the Carolinas. I don't even remember which. I think it is actually, I think it's South Carolina, but I could be wrong, is now talking about and probably will join what is becoming a crowded field for the Republican presidential nomination. And it's open season on Republicans these days, so criticizing Republicans is kind of unfair because everyone is. We have Bobby Jindal, who is the governor of Louisiana, who may come in joining the others. Here's the problem with all this. You know, already they're starting to snipe at each other. And I think the leadership of the party thought at the beginning of this, well, we'll have all these candidates and they'll present the many different facets of the Republican Party. It's like a diamond. It has many different facets, the Republican Party. But what's happening is they're already starting to attack each other. Rand Paul is attacking Bush. He said this week that Republicans suck. Jindal is attacking Rand Paul. And eventually they'll all start attacking each other. And I will remind people that the first presidential debate is scheduled for Cleveland, I think August 11th or August 8th or August 7th. I think it's August 8th of this year. And I don't care that I'm unclear on the dates because I shouldn't tell you the dates because it shouldn't be scheduled as a date. Somebody, we were talking tonight and somebody wants to do, they were thinking about doing their own Republican event and inviting all the candidates and maybe people would come and there'd be a lot of publicity. And I said, why don't you do a thing where you rent space at Roy Wilkins Auditorium or something and you set up the debate and then you send letters to all the candidates pleading with them not to come? Because this thing is so ridiculous on the Republican side. And I'm going to tell you why in a second. But frankly, some of these people have no business running for president because they're not serious. They are trying to build their own portfolios for social media, their own portfolios for contributions, and future jobs at CNN and Fox News and so forth. Now, I want to say this because I think it's important. Anyone who wants to run for president ought to be able to. I am certainly no arbiter of who gets to run for office or not. But observing this produces the following reaction. While all these Republicans are running around attacking the party and tearing each other down, what's happening right now? What's happening is there's one Democrat candidate people are talking about. And I realize there's more than one Democrat candidate, but there's one candidate whose face is plastered all over magazine covers and television every day, every website, everywhere you go, whether it's the Drudge Report, CNN, Fox News, when you turn these things on, there is one Democrat who is constantly being covered, and that is Hillary Clinton. Now, people think, well, they're making fun of her on Saturday Night Live, and she's mired in scandal. But the reality is her face is everywhere. Now, remember, I've said for years, if you want to understand how electronic media works in this country, in particular cable television and the 24-hour news cycle, then turn the TV on and then turn off the sound and watch. And you'll be amazed at what you see. Because the reality in this country is facial name recognition. In other words, you recognize the face, you know the name, or vice versa, is really the game. It doesn't matter what she's saying. It doesn't matter what they are saying about her. It doesn't matter whether it's Benghazi or now apparently Bill Clinton is mired in the FIFA scandal or whatever. Nobody cares about that, because what's happening is her name and face is everywhere. And when with a lot of these candidates, because we're talking about low information voters, and those are the people that are going to elect the president. These are the people that are going to determine the popular vote, especially when it comes to Republicans and when it comes to really when it comes to any kind of election. Presidential elections are determined by low information voters. Her name recognition will be huge. And while she's out there getting singular name recognition because she's the only viable candidate in the Democratic Party right now, the Republicans are going to be beating each other up. And I can tell you this, people say, well, this is going to happen with Democrats too. But I can tell you, no, the Democrats are not beating each other up. And as far as Hillary Clinton is concerned, you know, the coverage of Hillary Clinton is she gets to respond to all of those questions at some point. She gets to hold court with people. She gets to bring in the cameras for the events. She gets to bring in the funding. So it's really benefiting Hillary Clinton to have all of this scandal. And they're not stupid. I mean, they know exactly what they're doing. Meanwhile, we have the same scenario with the Republicans that we had in 2012 with Mitt Romney, where you have a candidate who ends up getting weakened, and then by the time we get to the general election, it's death by a thousand cuts. Now, I didn't think Mitt Romney was a great candidate, but I still say I don't think the Republicans have really stepped up to the plate with any really great candidates. And I know people will find that to be a surprise, certainly in terms of diversity and certainly in terms of age. They're a younger group of candidates. But I'll submit this as a thesis as an observer, because I'm sitting it out in terms of partisanship. Obviously, I'm not a Democrat, and obviously, I don't agree with Democrat policies, but I don't find much about Republicans that gets me very much excited. So I'll submit this as a thesis. You know, the Democrats technically are weak because, first of all, they're losing, an incumbent president. Second, they lost the 2014 race generally to moderate Republicans, because many people felt that the Democrats leaned too far to the left, primarily because of Barack Obama. But here's the problem with Republicans. The Republicans don't know what they are or who they are, what they stand for, and they can't settle on one or two candidates that can deliver a unified message early enough. And the question is whether or not it'll be too late when they finally find someone who can deliver that unified message. Is it going to be a message of supply-side economics? Is it going to be a message of actually trying to make the government smaller? Or is it going to be the reformicon message, which is really, you know what, we're just big government conservatives. We're just we're really good at running the government, and the Democrats aren't good at it, so we can fix this. And that's not what we need. You know, we need a government that gets out of the way. And in order to do that, we're going to have to substantially roll back what has been done over the last 8 years and go even further. To a certain extent, politics in this country is all about name recognition and the feeling that you know the candidate. Now, maybe Madam Mao is not the inevitable Democrat candidate. They certainly thought that she was the inevitable candidate in 2008. And of course, she was pushed aside by Barack Obama. But just because her publicity is scandalous, as I said, doesn't mean that she isn't then able to shoehorn her face and her name and her voice into the hearts and minds of many Americans who might come to the conclusion that she's getting beat up on because she is a woman. And you can forget about Carly Farina, because they're not going to remember Carly Farina in terms of name recognition versus Hillary Clinton, because she gets so much publicity. Now, maybe there is a greater strategy at play with the Republicans that I'm unaware of, and it will work, and that's fine. I don't know. That remains to be seen. But I still don't see a discernible plan for the economy or for foreign policy from any of these guys. Those things appear to be getting hammered out by candidates attacking each other rather than stating a primary primary purpose and approach. And so I don't think that bodes well for future Republican candidates. I think a debate for the Republicans in August is way too early. I think any kind of these campaign events and so forth, we're so far out from the first primary. It's probably not a good idea, because what it's going to do is create so much fatigue, and there's so much publicity for so many different candidates. While the Republicans speak with many voices and their confused voices, she goes out and speaks with one voice. So, and you know, you want an example? I'll give you a good example, and it's Rand Paul. And generally, I like Rand Paul, but what is his foreign policy? Does he have a foreign policy, or is it basically a policy of criticizing the president's policies and the Republicans' policies? What is Lindsey Graham's foreign policy? To be fair, and to go back on the other side of the spectrum with the Republicans, we don't know. What's Hillary Clinton's foreign policy? Well, we don't need to know, because the Republicans are too busy yelling at each other about whatever. They're taking shots at each other about whatever existing plan exists, whatever existing plan is being discussed. What's their economic plan? I mean, is it a supply side plan, or is it a plan to come up with more tax cuts to stimulate the consumption side of the economy, which is Keynesian? So I'm not hearing a lot of substantive, clear statements about what the economy needs, and or the statements that are being made. Let's say they're being made by a Scott Walker or a Ted Cruz. They're not getting through because there's too many Republican candidates. And I don't know what's going to happen with it. I just think that it's potentially very dangerous, and I have a lot of passion for pointing it out. Then you go and you talk, and I'm going to just continue a little bit more. You go out and you talk to Republicans in Republican groups, and I'm just talking about people in Minnesota, because I'm not talking to Republican groups in any other states. Hopefully that'll change. I'll get down and talk to some other people, but you know, I'm not sensing that there's a lot of consensus. When you go talk to people, there doesn't seem to be a consensus. Yeah, they all don't like Barack Obama, or they don't like Hillary Clinton now, or whatever. But then you start to ask what needs to be done, and you get all these shards of responses. You have evangelical Christian Republicans. You have libertarian Republicans. Somebody described themselves on Twitter the other day as a former libertarian, former Republican, current libertarian Republican. What the hell is that? I mean, how can you describe yourself that way? That's the problem. That's the problem with the Republicans, is there's just this mass confusion about what to be for, because I don't think that they know what they want to be for, even the candidates, let alone the rank and file. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this all pulls together. If you want to know what I think the strategy is, I'll tell you. I think the strategy is that Jeb Bush stays out of the campaign long enough to raise $1 billion and crushes all the other candidates who will look like pygmies compared to Bush, who will stay above it. And that will be the person that you know, Republicans will essentially be given to nominate. And these guys are all just running interference so that there's not a lot of negative publicity about Bush in the current time frame. I think it's a mistake. Moreover, there's a lot of people. I'm aware of at least one congressional district in Minnesota that, as a group, has already said that if Jeb Bush is nominated, they will sit it out. They won't work for Bush at all. So look for more and more of this sort of discord. So the Republican Party seems to be massively confused, and not just in the state of Minnesota. And that's going to be, I think, when we talk about candidates and we talk about personalities, we're, as I've said many times in many other podcasts, there's way too much talk about personalities, not enough about issues, and not enough about issues in terms of what's actually needed. You know, what kind of policy we really have to enact and why. The foreign policy thing is really confusing right now. You have Democrats and Republicans talking about sending arms or Green Berets or, you know, more and more troops to Iraq. Economically, really confusing to try to figure out, how does Rubio come up with an economic plan that includes a middle-class tax cut but doesn't include massive cuts to the federal budget? I mean, is it supply-side economics? Is it Keynesian economics? Is it classical economics? Is it Republican economics? What the hell is he talking about? So I'm not real thrilled about what I'm seeing. So I just wanted to talk about that very quickly. The U.S. Attorney General says soccer in the world, and specifically in the United States, is corrupt. I mention this for two reasons. One of them I alluded to earlier. First of all, Minneapolis is sickeningly falling all over itself to try and get, you know, those of us who live in the city and or the 5th Congressional District to pay for a soccer stadium. So some rich guy, Bill McGuire, can get richer. Now, Bill McGuire could probably afford to build the stadium himself, but you don't seem to hear too many proponents of the soccer stadium in liberal circles in Minneapolis complaining about inequality when it comes to sports. Just want to point that out. Second, guess who's in the middle of the FIFA scandal? Mr. Bill Clinton, former president of the United States. It appears that the soccer, whatever it is, FIFA, gave the Clinton Global Initiative money. It really makes me wonder what these government and state agencies, universities, trade groups, and companies who have contributed to the Clinton Global Initiative were thinking. And I would love to hear these companies and universities explain to stock and stakeholders, especially the taxpayers, what they were doing contributing large amounts of money to the Clinton Global Initiative and what exactly they got for it. Because my understanding is that the Clinton Global Initiative really doesn't do anything. It just brings people together to discuss problems. And you have these universities and big companies and public institutions giving these people lots and lots of money. And I'm surprised that nobody ever said, what are you doing this for? What exactly are you getting? Well, they're getting access. I mean, there's just no other way to, there's no other reason for them to do that. And I think that's fascinating that now we're going after soccer, especially at a time when we're trying to build a soccer stadium here in Minneapolis, which, you know, they keep saying they're not going to, there's not going to be any money spent. The taxpayers aren't going to pay for this thing, but you watch. They'll want to put us on the hook for it by adding some sort of tax on something in Minneapolis. Speaking of, the pedal pump war continues in Minneapolis. Every time I talk about this, I have to explain it for the people who listen to the podcast in other places that don't have pedal pump bars. These are, how can I explain them? It's a basically, it looks like a trolley car. It's got a bar. The people, the patrons sit at the little stools, and then they pedal. And it's technically classified as a bicycle, but it's like an 18-person bicycle. And it's really fun, and groups of people rent these things. And they also have mixers where you can, you know, pay for one seat, and then you're with a bunch of other people that you don't know, and you get to know them. And you ride up and down the street drinking and talking. And apparently, only in Minneapolis, only in a place like Minneapolis or Seattle would this thing happen here, in my opinion, because we're so concerned about other people in Minneapolis specifically, but both cities, the whole metro, but in particular in Minneapolis, we're so concerned about other people and what other people are doing. What do you think would happen if I started a Facebook page that said, I hate pretentious Minneapolis bicycles, or I hate women, or I hate anything? Cyclists who subscribe to a page called I Hate the Pedal Pub essentially assaulted and attacked a pedal pub over the weekend. I talked about it in the last podcast, and I thought it was Minneapolis police, but actually they attacked. They were three attacks. First two went off without a hitch after they went on Facebook and they said, let's gather and do this, and we're going to attack these pedal pubs and show them. And apparently, after watching some of the TV coverage online, it was a little more serious than just squirting people with squirt guns. They used water balloons and high-powered squirt guns, and they sprayed the woman who was driving the vehicle. And apparently, she got a lot of water in her eyes, and that was potentially dangerous. But in that, and then another particular case, apparently they attacked a pedal pub full of off-duty Burnsville police, and then they were arrested. Now they're all complaining about their arrests, and they're saying the guys who perpetrated the attack all say that they were abused by these police officers. And so there has to be an investigation into whether or not these police officers treated them poorly. And they're complaining about their arrest. One of them said that all he heard was, quote, this will be fun, and the next thing you know, we're under arrest. Well, here's a couple of points. First of all, the attackers, the guys who have been arrested and charged with felonies, by the way, are all in their late 20s through the 40s. They're in their four, a couple of them were in their 40s. So at what point do you no longer be, at what point do you grow up and stop being 12 years old? Seriously. First of all, there's a whole thing in Minneapolis that people in Minneapolis seem to think that pedal pubs are for suburban residents. And they come in and they act poorly in the city on the pedal pubs. Now, if you've lived in Minneapolis, I've lived downtown, I lived uptown, I've lived all over the city. And when you live in the city of Minneapolis, you're going to hear people on the street, you're going to see drunks, you're going to, it's just a reality. There's a lot of bars. I used to live in a corner in uptown. You guys remember the podcast. In fact, you can still listen to them, where people would come out of the bars at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. I used to love to record because you could hear them down on the street. I would put the mic right by the window so that I could hear them. It's part of life in the city. Why would they single out the pedal pubs as some kind of serious problem? And then why would they want to use some sort of what they thought was comedic violence to attack these people? And I'll tell you what I think. First of all, it's one more example of the entitlement attitude a lot of people in this city feel. And I don't really understand why they get this idea. In other words, I get to say what's cool. I get to say what's not cool. I get to have my way no matter what. And usually those people tend to be cyclists. And that's why I call them brown shirts. And I'm going to speak specifically to the bicycle people in the city of Minneapolis and in the metro. You guys got a problem. You've got an arrogance problem, and it's not going to end well. Okay? That's the first thing. The second thing is, one of the most ridiculous situations I have seen in my many, many years in Minneapolis and St. Paul is this pedal pub controversy. And it's so typical. And of course, one of the news outlets I read found a U of M professor to blame social media for this. Well, this is social media that's really at fault here. Well, whose fault is it? Well, I'll tell you. It's the people that acted like idiots' fault. And I think, and I hope, and this is what I actually think, I hope the judges, and they won't, but I'm only hoping, these guys should be charged with felonies. If they're convicted, they should be given the maximum sentence. They should get to spend some time in Stillwater for being idiots, because sooner or later, some fool is going to do something like attack a pedal pub again because they think it's funny, and then somebody's really going to get hurt, and it's not going to be good. So they need to throw the book at these people to make sure that they make an example out of them. And you know what? If you want to act like a 12-year-old, that's your problem. You know, you're 43 years old and you're riding around with a squirt gun shooting people that you don't know. That's really stupid. So what else is going on? I got to mention this. And this is another coverage issue. So a bridge collapsed in northern Minnesota, right? I just want you to hold that thought in your head. Especially around here, we had the I-35 bridge collapse. People here really are touchy about bridge collapses. The parochial and paranoid, not to mention poorly written and edited Minneapolis Tribune, shouted today in a headline, "Bridge collapse." Now, you know immediately what kind of image that conjures, because this is going to be added to the "we don't have enough infrastructure money" cries that you hear all over the country, and in particular in this area. We need more infrastructure. And when they say infrastructure, what they mean is jobs for their friends, or more programs, more bike managers, more bike officials, more bike trails, and more trains. That's what they mean by infrastructure. They don't mean building roads and bridges so that we can get cars and trucks and businesses, their goods. But this was a rail bridge. And I actually had to read the story twice in the Minneapolis Tribune before I figured out this was a rail bridge. In fact, I think I actually printed the story up from the KSTP site to get the real story, because they made it sound like it was an infrastructure problem, even though they never said that. This was a rail company bridge. This is not a public, as far as I know, this was not a public bridge. And if I'm wrong about that, I'll correct myself. But railroads are in charge of dealing with and handling their bridges. Why did the bridge collapse? You have to read all the way down to the bottom of the story to find out that the bridge itself was on fire. And they don't even tell you, when they tell you it was on fire, they don't tell you why it was on fire. Well, we don't know why it was on fire. And I just want to say very quickly, I'm starting to wonder how many of these rail issues in Minnesota and Wisconsin, derailments and other kinds of problems, are sabotage. And you won't hear anybody talk about that because they don't want to draw attention to it. But I wonder about that. The story had all of these man on the street interviews from people in the town. One of the guys in the town says, "We have a 100-year-old bridge in town, and this is going to happen. It's going to collapse in town, and we're going to have oil all over the river, blah, 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 blah." Did the reporter bother to ask any of them what they had thought or how they would have voted about the Keystone Pipeline? Was this an oil train? This is a rail bridge. Again, railroads maintain their own bridges and tracks. Nobody knows what caused the fire yet. And it may not have had anything to do with the rail bridge itself. It may just be that the heat and the sunlight caused something to, start on fire, and it caused a fire on the bridge. And the bridge may have been just fine. But the impression is given bridges are falling down. And now politicians can go out and say, bridges are falling down, and they'll be technically correct. But we are jumping to conclusions here because of poor reporting. And as far as what could have caused it, I learned something very interesting tonight. And I have to tell people about this because I think it's great. First of all, apparently we have an infestation of dandelions all across the state. I was at a party a couple days ago, and somebody told me about that, and I'm not quite sure why it's occurring, but apparently dandelions are becoming an environmental problem. And it didn't seem to me in the last couple of weeks that there were too many dandelions in my neck of the woods, but then at a certain point, the dandelions go to seed, and then the seeds blow around, and you have those seeds in the air. Well, it was like it was snowing here today. I mean, this white stuff covers the lawn, and it's these sort of clusters of dandelion seeds. And I thought, well, I'll go and rake them up. Well, they don't rake up very well. You rake them up, and it's kind of like wool. It's not quite that consistency, but it looks like you've shaved it off an animal. And so I was out there trying to figure out what to do with all this stuff, whether I should throw it in the trash or whatever. My neighbor comes over, and he goes, if you light that, it'll light on fire. It's like gasoline. You can light that on fire and it'll burn away. And I was like, no way. So yeah, he shows me, we go to the gutter, and there's a whole line of dandelion seeds that are kind of grouped together. And he puts his lighter down and lights them. And it burns like gasoline. It burned all the way down the gutter, and it got rid of all of it. So I was like, wow. So when my friend Mitch came over tonight to have steak dinner, I said, and this meal comes with an amazing demonstration before the evening is over. We went out, and there's a little pathway to a park near my house, and this dandelion stuff was everywhere. It looks like snow. And so I lit a match, and I leaned down and I lit it, and it just burned all the way down the line. And Mitch was like, oh my God, that is so amazing. It does. It burns like, so it's possible. I mean, I don't know, but it's possible that a bunch of that dandelion stuff got involved with a creosote and got lit on fire somehow. I mean, who knows why the bridge collapsed. These are things that need to be determined. And I don't know why I key on stuff like this. I just do, because I think it's the reporting. I think it creates the wrong impression, and it's everywhere. There are so many examples every day of things like this. One of my favorites this week, and I'll close with this, is the Goldman Sachs analysts say that the world is drowning in debt, and what are we going to do about it? And suddenly people are aware that the world is drowning in debt. A couple things about the story that I saw. First of all, this is an old story. Goldman Sachs put out this report a long time ago. In fact, I think I even talked about it in one of the podcasts. And it is true that, corporate debt is very high, individual debt is very high historically, and government debt is also high historically. And then, of course, we have aging populations that are going to start drawing down on things like Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare and similar programs in the EU and Japan. And so it's not anything new. And I think it was the Telegraph or one of those newspapers picked it up and blazed it on the front pages. And I noticed today it was all over Drudge, and it's on Fox News. And now suddenly Goldman Sachs says that the world's drowning in debt. Debt has been a problem in the world for quite some time. And I think it could eventually cause a huge problem. But so far it hasn't. And I'm not saying I agree with it or not. I mean, I think we have a big problem with borrowing money. And I don't know when. It's just interesting that this popped up out of nowhere. Now, second thing is, the Goldman Sachs article doesn't include China. Because if it includes China, China's debt is now something like 270% of its GDP, which is historically when you get above, there's a number, I don't know what it is, but it's something like 180% a debt to GDP ratio. When you get above 100%, it's a problem. But when you get total debt 180 plus, around 200%, it's usually an indicator that there's going to be a severe economic problem. And China's has the, I think China has about the highest debt to GDP ratio in the world. If it isn't, if it doesn't, it's close to Greece, right? And we all know what's going on with Greece. But the Goldman Sachs article doesn't include China. So it's going to be a lot worse if they include China. I just thought it was very interesting that they didn't include China in that. Well, that's what I'm talking about. And of course, we put out a report that includes countries, you know, that have higher debt to GDP ratios than the United States. And I just, it's hard to put it in perspective for people. Well, is this a problem or isn't it a problem? And the answer is we don't know. I mean, none of these guys can tell you whether the debt to GDP ratio being high is going to cause a problem or not. We won't know till it actually causes a problem. And it doesn't address the greater issue, which is government power and deficit spending to enhance and grow government power and enhance and grow the things that government is responsible for that then further chokes the economy and further chokes innovation and further causes problems because we can't run it properly. For example, the IRS, which can't seem to keep its records secure and which can't seem to answer the phone. And that's just one example. And the IRS is probably one of the best run of all of the government agencies. So that's what I'm talking about, that those are the kinds of issues that aren't coming up. And people are talking about things that, you know, the average person doesn't even think about. So you kind of need a podcast to put this stuff into some kind of perspective so that you can understand, oh, well, I don't know. Do I think this is a problem or not? So those are your updates for Thursday. And I will do another update Thursday night for Friday and the weekend as we head into the first week of June. Thanks for listening to Podcast 374. I want to thank the digital sponsor of the BobDavisPodcast.com, Madcase Studios. What do they do? Well, they create quality original automotive artwork. So if you have a favorite car, you can get an actual piece of original artwork of that car, let's say. Maybe a car that you grew up with, or your dad's car, or your grandpa's car. Madcase can do a great rendering of it that's really a piece of original artwork. And Madcase is going to be out at some of the antique auto shows this summer. I'll tell you more as we get closer to those events. And maybe the Mobile Podcast Command Studio will be there as well. Click on the banners at the top of the BobDavisPodcast.com for more information about digital sponsors and all the sponsors of the Bob Davis Podcast. Thanks for listening on Blog Talk Radio, on TuneIn, or using Stitcher.com as an app to bring the podcast to your Android device. Of course, the granddaddy of podcasting, iTunes. Bob Davis Podcast has been available on iTunes for a long time, or TuneIn. Thank you for liking, sharing, favoriting, and following on Facebook and Twitter, and thanks for your donations, which fund fully the Mobile Podcast Command unit, collecting cash now for diesel fuel to head out to Washington, D.C., and the big trip out east. So thanks again for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com. Just look for the big, secure, yellow donate button, which is underneath the picture of the Mobile Podcast Command ambulance. Thanks for listening to Podcast 374.